What is your legacy going to be? I've come to a patch of English countryside to the north of London, where two agricultural researchers are not only remembered and admired, but their legacy is still in use more than 150 years after they set to work. I'm at Rothamsted Research, where there is the longest running agricultural experiment in the world, and it was set up in 1843. Despite the wind and rain that the British skies are throwing at me at the moment, I'm going up to the site to meet one of Rothamsted's researchers in the centre of the field that's generating science that's being used for the benefit of agriculture the world over. I've made my way now in the company of Phil Brooks, who is one of the scientists here at Rothamsted, to the heart of the Broadbalk experiment. You, by training or vocation, if you like, you're a soil microbialist, is that right?
Perhaps by luck.
But you love this place,
yes,
too.
Yes, I do. Farming, environmental research, history of science, almost all aspects of biology are encompassed in this field.
Which is an amazing thing. And it's how many acres in total?
Ah, that's not an easy question. I can't tell you. But each plot is about 0.2 hectares, running straight up the field, and in the middle are paths about 2 metres. The plots are, I think, 21 metres wide.
And it's crisscrossed by a road, and then we've got some lovely mature trees, oak
yes.
and horse chestnut yes, and beech standing around us. Do you think that those two scientists, John Laws and Henry Gilbert, knew what a legacy they were starting all those years ago in 1843?
I doubt it. I understand. It was initially planned to demonstrate to farmers the very important fact that you could get the benefits from adding inorganic manures or inorganic fertilisers, nitrate, ammonium or sulfate, phosphate, provided you had them in the right concentrations and the right proportions, that you could get from organic manure, farmyard manure. And this was an absolute breakthrough. You can see we've gone from, in about 1840, a yield of 1 or 2 tonnes per hectare. Thanks to modern fertilisers, modern herbicides, now on this field we can get 10 tonnes of wheat per hectare.
So this was always set up for people to come and actually see. Seeing is believing.
Yes, because some of the plots, for example, you can see if you go past the farmyard manure plots, you will see the nil plot with a very small yield. Again, this was part of the experiment. They knew they wouldn't get a big yield from it. It still gives a yield of 1.5 tonnes per hectare of wheat each year, which sadly, I think, is still about the world average grain yield. It shows how bad things are and how far agriculture still has to go in the developing world. There are other plots. The one next to it is given phosphorus only, so it's not balanced, if you like. You need the nitrogen and potassium to go with it. It's not there, so again, you get another bad yield. Another thing I think is interesting, fertilizer has been applied on these soils for more than 160 years. And there is no evidence whatsoever of any chemical, biological, or physical damage to these soils that can be related to the fertilizers. It gives the lie, I think, to the fact that inorganic fertilizers are inherently bad environmentally. They're not, if used properly.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that subject, because what I want our podcast listeners to hear now is something from Uganda. In fact, it's somebody I think who's very enthusiastic about organic agriculture. So with that, I'll hand over to my colleague, Georgina Smith.
Hello. You haven't heard from me before. I'm Georgina Smith, one of the writers on The New Agriculturist. I want to introduce you to someone I've just met in Uganda. His name's Richard Tamushabi. He's a key farmer trainer, a farmer, and a teacher. I went to his farm to look at the way he does things, because just like Broadbalk, he's experimenting too. Make no mistake, he believes organic farming really is the way forward.
I'm called Richard Tomushavi, a key farmer trainer, and my farm is called Kwikiza Mixed Farm, and this is my pineapple garden, and I planted this pineapple garden purposely for home consumption, and also for demonstration purposes, train the community how to grow pineapples and the management of it.
Do they taste good?
Very much, very much. You know, the first market is the stomach, then the surplus. I have to sell them to what?
I like that, the first priority is the stomach.
The stomach. Then the second market, put on a bike, then I take you down to the supermarket or the town. Yeah. So
we've just come a little bit past the pineapple patch, and where are we standing now?
So now we are standing in the vegetable garden.
What have we got here?
So this is a compost area.
Yeah.
I make this compost manure from the cow dung.
Yes.
Then after 1 month, it will be already pure compost.
Wow. And what's all this? This looks like banana leaves, dried banana leaves.
So this one, the compost is down here.
Oh, I see. Now, so that's the manure, and then this is protecting it.
Yeah. Not the nutrients to escape. That's why I've covered it with the mulches on top.
This
compost I applied in banana plantation. Also, I use this compost in the vegetable garden. Also, in the other pineapples I've just shown you. To go in the shop and buy fertilizers, and the fertilizers are very expensive. But this one can make compost with the local materials, and you manure your crops.
I've heard an argument about organic farming, that if you use manure and organic ways of farming instead of chemicals and fertilizers, then you will get more pests and more diseases.
I disagree that a lot of diseases can be seen in organic farming. The reason why I disagree with the chemicals, to use chemicals, because the chemicals are harmful to our bodies more when you're spraying the pests. And if you continue using chemicals, the soil will totally die because the good organism will be swept off with the chemicals. But if you use these organic methods of farming, whereby you use compost, urine, and you are practicing something which will long last, because even the grandchildren will find our soils are still fertile. But if you use a lot of chemicals, at the long run, you find the soils become poor, poor, poor.
So there you have it. Before I go, you can see more about the Food for Thought program in the picture feature in New Agriculturist. In the next podcast, there's more from Uganda, looking at the impact of conflict in the north on education and how agriculture is the key to getting communities back together. Now, with that pro-organic message in mind, here's back to Susie at the Broadbrook Experiment.
Well, thank you, George, for that interesting point of view, if you like, or example of how organic agriculture seems to be helping production in that part of Uganda. Back here with Phil Brooks. When you hear that kind of concern about chemical inputs and soil health, what's your reaction?
I think these points have to be taken seriously. I mean, these are highly experienced farmers working in an area of the world that I've been there. I've been to Uganda, Kenya, South Africa, and they're extremely inhospitable areas in general to produce crops. So you have to listen, but we've certainly found the biggest benefit to crops is not to use inorganic fertilizers or organic, but a combination of the two. In most of the soils of Africa, they're called red earths, and phosphorus is usually the limiting nutrient. That means however much nitrogen you put on, the crops won't grow because there's not enough phosphorus. And phosphorus has often been called the bottleneck of world hunger. And that's a very important statement. Our best yields were always with a combination of organic and inorganic fertilizer.
Coming back to the theme here of demonstration, it's what the teacher and farmers doing in Uganda is showing people how, and that's what this is about. This
Absolutely.
Is what you feel is key.
Yes, I do. There are long-term experiments in Africa, not as long as Broadbrook, but the very famous Kibeti experiment at Kenya, which was also worked on, is on similar lines to these, and it's releasing very valuable information, not dissimilar to the Broadbrook work. But the use of long-term experiments as demonstrations to farmers in Africa is essential. If I may just go on a little bit, I was really touched. We did an experiment in Uganda where we set up with farmers individual plots on their fields. And in fact, one man came on his bicycle for 60 miles to see this work. Well, he didn't come on his bicycle. His son pedalled all the way and he sat on the back of it. But even so, it shows the interest and enthusiasm. And the farmers were impressed by the end with this combination of organic and inorganic fertilisers.
One thing that's occurred to me sitting here in the wind and the rain, but in the shelter of your car at the centre of this plot, is are you able to now put new angles to the work that's being done to sort of go beyond the kind of traditional agricultural research that the founders, Laws and Gilbert, started with.
I hope they would not be dissatisfied with what they see at Rothamsted. It's a natural progression from what they're doing. This experiment, again, we discovered only 15 years ago that the conventional wisdom that phosphorus does not leach from soils, that was always believed, is not true. If you look across, you'll see the drains.
Well, down into the drain,
yes.
In the ditch.
And in the winter, these soils run with water from the plots, which, amazingly, Laws and Gilbert supplied. So 10, 15 years ago, we looked at the water in the drains, not believing to find any phosphorus, and there was an absolute correlation between phosphorus in the soils and phosphorus in the drains, which startled the whole of the agronomic and environmental community. Now, that was a direct child of Laws and Gilbert. They started the experiments, they set up the treatments, they put the drains in, and 160 years later, we discovered something that we would never have seen without them.
So it is an amazing legacy, isn't it? Everyone listening, each of our podcast listeners, I'm sure, would like to leave some small legacy, if not as great as Laws and Gilbert.
It was a terrific one. I would honestly say that this is a living laboratory that we're looking at the moment. It's certainly not a museum in any way at all.
Well, my thanks to Phil Brooks, and before him to Richard Tamushabe, for giving us their views, their perspectives on two different scales of experiments, I suppose. If you'd like to have a look through some more views, then take a look at this month's Points of View, because there's some stirring stuff in New Agriculturist on soils. And do let us know your views. We know you're listening. We check on the number of people who are downloading the podcast week by week, whatever it is, because we just love to hear from you. From me, Susie Emmett, and the rest of the Wren Media and New Agriculturist team, bye for now.